and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And, you know, every once in a while we get to an episode where we're both at the beginning saying, yeah, I wonder how long this episode is going to be. And it's kind of the opposite of things like Frank Zappa and Reba McEntire, where we have massive, massive libraries of music to go through. For today's artist, there really isn't a lot. There's a couple albums. We'll talk about each of those albums, of course. But the artist's name is John, not Rick, John Astley.
Oh, and Brian, just so you know, throughout underneath all of this, I'm going to be playing Never Gonna Give You Up until you say his name.
Oh, jeez. Oh, stop. Stop. Don't Rickroll me, man. He's a name that if you were around in the 80s and watched television in the 80s, there's one very specific song, at least one very specific opening to a song that you probably heard 1,000 times. And that is going to be probably his biggest mainstream claim to fame, although he's worked behind the scenes a lot, and we'll talk about that as well. John Astley is a British-born record producer who has also recorded two albums as a singer-songwriter in the 80s. He's not related to Rick Astley. He is, however, related by way of his sister, ex-brother-in-law of Pete Townsend. So a little bit of a royalty connection there. Mm-hmm. As a producer, he's best known for his work with The Who on their 1978 album, Who Are You? He also remastered the entire Who back catalog.
So you mean that song wasn't written specifically for CSI?
No, it was not. You'd think, right? Because it's so perfectly fits. Well, even Won't Get Fooled Again, mm-hmm, and all those songs thematically seem to fit each of the CSI shows. It was
supervisor was really did a good job.
They totally did. Yeah. We're going to hear some of his music later, but the guy has a very unique deadpan style of singing. Kind of like a croak meets Catherine Hepburn, old Catherine Hepburn kind of singing voice. There's only one other singer I can think of that sounds like him. And if I would have thought ahead, I would have made Hammond do a double show where we do both John Astley and the singer Bluey Sum, because there are times that the two are almost indistinguishable vocal-wise.
Yeah.
And Bluey Sum only has two albums too.
While listening, I kept thinking that he was a depressed British version of Kevin Gilbert.
Oh, okay. Who already is a depressed American musician.
But there's a lot of Kevin Gilbertisms in his music and his lyrics.
That is the connection that I was hoping you'd recognize. And, you know, I've said it a million times on the show before, but I am a lyrics guy. And so if you give me decent music, decent arrangement, but top it off with some really creative, witty lyrics, then you'll get me. You'll totally hook me in, because that's the thing that pulls me in. It's not the it's got a good beat and I can dance to it kind of thing. It is the, oh wow, that's a very clever way of saying that thing that you just said, mm-hmm, in the song.
Yeah. And I've noticed that too. There's a few songs that are pretty mundane and blah, but they, mm-hmm, say things in the song lyrically that I've never either never heard of before, never put words to before, or had never heard in a song before. Right. And that makes me hang on to it.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Great. Well, let's talk about his first album, 1987's Everyone Loves the Pilot Except the Crew.
The kingdom's in a crisis and the state is in a state. You can point your finger, demand recompense.
But this was the album that featured the song Jane's Getting Serious, which reached number 77 on the Hot 100 and number 7 on the mainstream rock chart. And this was his most commercially successful song. It was later popularized by Heinz Ketchup. They used it to simulate how slow moving the ketchup is in the bottle. The whole anticipation thing. Probably the second most famous song used by Heinz Ketchup besides Carly Simon's Anticipation. By the way, that ad also starred a pre-Friends, Matt LeBlanc, who had a couple things like that prior to being Joey Tribbiani.
How you doing?
Exactly. Yeah. He was also, I want to say it was... Bon Jovi music video for Miracle, which was the song from the Young Guns 2 soundtrack, and then also in Say It Isn't So from Bon Jovi. And then at the very beginning of Into the Great Wide Open, the video for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, you actually see him close up getting a tattoo.
Oh, and that's got Johnny Depp in it too, doesn't it?
Oh, does it? I didn't realize it. Oh, that's right. The tattoo artist is Depp. How about that? That's hilarious. Oh, wow. A lot of cameos in this. Gabrielle Anwar from Scent of a Woman, Terrence Trent D'Arby, China Phillips, and Matt LeBlanc. That's cool. I need to go watch that video now. Protector of life, I'll keep the people happy by telling them lies that disenchanted will never get in my way. I have them covered and no one will hear what they say. They will not harm you if they want to survive, because if they touch you, I... All right, so that's about it for Everyone Loves the Pilot Except the Crew.
Okay, followed... so this album, yeah. This album, when I started in, it took me a minute to put my ears into 1987 space.
Yeah, right.
Because the instrumentation sounds and the mm-hmm. way it's mixed and mastered and the presentation is very, very, very much of the late 80s.
Absolutely is, yeah.
And when, yeah,
there are certain instruments that you have not heard since 1989 that are featured very heavily on this album.
And so when I was able to put my ears in that mindset and kind of get beyond how dated it sounds, mm-hmm. I was able to sit back and really enjoy it for what it is, with the lyrical content and the structure and the kind of the spine of the songs that could be very easily redone and covered by any number of talented people today.
Yeah, it'd be cool to hear. It'd actually be really cool to hear some of these songs covered by newer artists, for sure. In 1988, he released The Complete Angler. Another single came from this one, Put This Love to the Test. Reached number 74 on the Hot 100 and number 3 on modern rock charts. That's actually where I discovered him, hearing him on alternative radio, was hearing Jane's Getting Serious, hearing Put This Love to the Test, picked up the albums, and then was just hooked by his lyric writing. If you need to talk to someone, rest assured that you can talk to me.
So one of the things that I think is really interesting is he it's not like he didn't have some success,
right?
As a solo artist. So mm-hmm. he must be very, very successful in other jobs.
He is. Make
him want to not be a solo artist or feel like he need to be a solo artist.
For sure, right? Because otherwise he would have been, you know, it would have been one and done. We never would have heard about him. Or he might have tried releasing more albums to kind of capture the popularity that he was getting from those singles, from those two albums, but he decided he didn't need to. He's actually been more of a producer, working behind the scenes. Produced albums for, get ready for this list, Eric Clapton, Barclay James Harvest, Corey Hart, Deborah Harry. He's mastered records for The Who, ABBA, George Harrison, Tori Amos, Eric Clapton, The Rolling Stones, The Pretty Things, Jules Holland, Tom Jones, Judas Priest, Clovenhoof, Emmylou Harris, Etta Guru, Damian Dempsey, Tears for Fears, Led Zeppelin, Hot House Flowers, Level 42, The Boomtown Rats, John Mayall, Marilyn Martin, Toto, Nora Jones, Stereophonics, KT Tunstall, Van Morrison, Paul McCartney, Peter Gabriel, Slade, Sting, Bono, Starlight Campbell, and Anathema.
Yes.
There's no way I was going to do that all in one breath.
One of the things I really enjoy about this list is he not only covers a lot of different eras. He covers a ton of different styles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means that he's got the skill to catch that sound of that style or that genre and mix to that and master that. So it's not kind of just washed over as a certain thing. He's able to adapt mm-hmm. and he's got a good ear for adapting, because he's done everybody from, you know, progressive to, you know,
classic rock. Yeah, I mean, Eric Clapton, The Stones, The Who, Toto, you know, just like all those classic rockers that he's worked with. And then, you know, working with Corey Hart and Debbie Harry.
Yeah.
Post-punk, rock, alternative, John Mayall, Boomtown Rats, 80s. And a couple that we've done here on the show, Level 42, Tears for Fears. Are those the only two?
Nope, there's Peter Gabriel.
Oh, Peter Gabriel, yeah.
Yeah, there's a few I want to talk to you about, but yeah, those are the ones we've covered so far.
Cool. What about the rest of his career? What else has he done?
Well, one of the things that when I was digging around to kind of fill up more time on the show, because right now we're, what, it's 7.5 minutes? And
and we're already done with his history.
Yeah. So when I was looking around, I figured out that he'd actually done some work in film. So he worked on the sound in the sound department for Quadrophenia, The Kids Are All Right, the documentary. Mm-hmm. And the Neil Diamond concert movie called Thank You Australia.
Oh,
but he was also worked on the soundtrack of Johnny B. Goode. He did the performer for Been There, Done That.
Mm-hmm.
He composed on the short video for Marilyn Martin's Night Moves. He worked in the music department for Live in Boston by The Who. And then he also did another Who album called Live in Texas in 75. And there's a documentary called Astley's Way. The film is a documentary about the life and times of composer Edward Astley.
Oh, okay. It
includes still shots of Edwin Astley and his family, music from the Jules Holland Rhythm and Blues Band. I wonder if it's his dad.
Oh, it might be. I did see there was a connection when I was on Wikipedia a minute ago. Talking about the Who Are You album that that he worked on, like actually produced for The Who. Mm-hmm. He actually took a 25-minute demo of The Who song, Who Are You, and edited it down to a 6-minute track. So that classic studio version of Who Are You that we all know and love, the 6-minute version, is edited down from a 25-minute demo by John Astley.
So I would like to hear Dream Theater cover the original.
Yeah, that's about their length, isn't it? That would be about the amount of time.
A little short for them, but yeah.
That'd be cool, actually, to hear the raw materials that he worked with for mm-hmm. the studio track. That's cool.
Yeah, it's like what I get when I put these episodes together.
Yes, right? Right. Well, not this time. This time you're going to have to slow us down. Edwin Astley, by the way, is the son of noted composer Edwin Ted Astley. He's also the brother of Virginia Astley, who is a recording artist, who is a member of Victims of Pleasure and the Ravishing Beauties. And he's married to writer Judy Astley, who is an English illustrator. And she's written 18 novels. I'm trying to see if this is like a series. No, it looks like it's not. But she's a freelance designer and writer. But she's released 18 novels ever since 1994, none of which, it's funny, some of these are sound music related. Unchained Melanie is one of the one of her books. The Look of Love, I Should Be So Lucky, and In the Summertime, all books by Judy Astley. So whether or not they're really influenced by titles of famous songs, it does feel like there's a musical connection here. Not really any statistics or general notes to talk about.
He released two albums and he charted moderately. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. We talked about the two chart positions he had. I can't imagine that he did a whole lot of touring, but if he did, we'll find out about it. I think it's a pretty obvious what we would pick to be his Stairway to Heaven song. As I'm stalling as I pull up the
the list. Yeah, I didn't actually make a list. I just wrote Jane's Getting Serious because I didn't think there'd be anything, but I also, if this isn't at the top of the list, then we've done something wrong.
Right, it would have to be.
There is no pressure on us. It's a relationship based entirely on trust. No complications. You would not see me for dust. Come around 11 and it's time to get home. I'm going away. I can't leave her alone.
It does not look like he's done any concerts or touring, which isn't a big surprise knowing his producing background and the fact that only had two albums that charted.
Well, it sounds like he's more comfortable behind the glass than he is anywhere else.
I think so. Yeah, which is a bummer because I think he's got a great ear for song arrangement and a voice that you don't hear in music, a voice that you don't hear in pop music that is refreshing and different and recognizable. And I really, really like that.
Yeah.
So,
and to be fair, you came into this. Remember last week, we're like, hey, we're both pretty unfamiliar. Well, this week I was totally unfamiliar and you had bathed in the guy.
Yeah, I had bathed in the thin puddle of water of his recording library, John Astley. Yeah, you know what? Every once in a while, it doesn't hurt to put out a short episode of a podcast. I guess we've learned that today.
I think, but that also, I didn't know who this guy was, and I came away really, really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And this is a really easy stepping off point for people if they want to try something new, for them to find these two albums and give them a whirl, because it's a low investment. It's a low level of entry.
And that is really the thing with Soundography. And I forget that sometimes that when we started this, it wasn't about, hey, let's find big musical catalogs by artists so that we can introduce them to people. It's groups that we ourselves maybe don't know a lot about, or groups that one of us really like and know about, the other one doesn't have any idea about, and a way to have that experience of introducing a friend to a musician or band that you think they would really like. And that's absolutely the case with this. It's like, all right, I think Hammond would like this. I think people in the audience would like this. So good. Thank you for reminding me why we started the show, Hammond.
Well, it's a multiple faceted reason, but that is definitely one of them, is the fact that sometimes the lesser known artists that only have one or two albums still are really good, and it's sad they're lesser known.
Yeah, yeah, it totally is. In this case, it's very, very sad, because I would have snatched up. He's one of those artists that if I saw a brand new album from, I'd buy it sight unseen. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that today, because the brand new Joe Jackson album came out last week, and I'm actually giving it a listen in Apple iTunes before I decide to plunk down the money and say, yep, I want this in my library. But boy, 10 years ago, if you would have told me, oh yeah, brand new album from Joe Jackson, I would have, I did. He had a Fast Forward album several years ago, and I bought it as soon as I heard about it. And I actually enjoyed it. It's not like I was bitten by Joe Jackson and now I don't trust it. It's just the fact that, you know, it's been such a long time. I don't jump onto albums willy-nilly as much as I used to anymore and buy them without hearing anything.
I will tell you, I did get bitten. I bought Blues Traveler's new album that came out late last year, early this year. Mm-hmm. No, late last year. Sight Unseen, and I am sad that I bought it sight unseen. I'm not saying I don't like it all. Yeah. I'm just saying that plopping money down for a full album didn't pay off as it has in the past.
Bummer. Let's talk about covers, because I do like the thought of hearing this guy's voice doing songs that we're familiar with. And I'll go first. Who would like to hear them cover? I'd like to hear him cover Beautiful by Christina Aguilera, because there's a song that is titled and about and sung with a beautiful voice, like a very smooth, controlled voice. And I'd say, while I really like his voice, it's anything but controlled and beautiful and smooth. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be like a kind of an irony to hear him cover the song Beautiful. But the fact that he would cover it, like hearing him cover it, would validate his voice for that song, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It totally does. And I think that's a fantastic choice.
Thanks.
It makes me kind of embarrassed by mine.
You know, you say that all the time, and you always have great choices. So
there. So mine, it has to be him working in current day setting. Mm-hmm. That's the main caveat for mine, is he has to have access to modern equipment. And my choice is Jeremy by Pearl Jam.
Oh, that's cool.
And the reason I wanted to do it is I wanted to move it away from this guitar-based angry reporting of an event to more of a moody piano-based cry for help. And I think you could really do a kind of a very unsettling, almost gut-wrenching version of it if given the opportunity.
Yeah. No, I like that. I think that's a great choice. And I think it almost becomes a Jeremy singing outside the first person. You know, like he's singing it himself, watching him as a third person kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a great choice.
Yeah, all that time of me working as a crisis worker came into play on that. It actually kind of hit me harder when I was writing it down than I expected. I went through the lyrics again, and I'm thinking about it more of a piano-based, kind of a moody song. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I can make it through that if it was this.
Wow. Well, let's get to our playlists. There's no greatest hits to pull this with, but I think you and I both stayed away from Jane's Getting Serious just because it felt like too easy a grab.
Do you want to talk about how we limited ourselves because of the limited
availability? We did, yes. Instead of it being our typical five songs, we limited it to our favorite three songs out of two albums, because otherwise there'd be a lot of overlap. We'd be fighting over who gets what, and then just stayed away from the big hit, which was Jane's Getting Serious. By the way, true story, I was dating a girl named Jane in 1987 when the song came out, and I was wanting to keep things on a very friendly level, and my friends remarked that much like the song, Jane was looking at me differently, like I was something she owned, just like the lyrics say. And it was a really funny, I mean, that I'll always make that connection when I hear the song. Let's get to our playlists. First song on my list comes from Everyone Loves the Pilot. It is called Better Never Than Late.
I was watching the sign. Left nothing up to the imagination. While I was feeding her lines, I had my foot hard down on the floor. And although I was going no place,
you'll find actually has a lot of that does this a lot with his songs, where it's kind of a, you know, tongue-in-cheek joke, even just the title. And that is that kind of thing with the with the writing that he does throughout his lyrics.
So that actually is one of the key things that reminds me of Kevin Gilbert, because he did The Shaming of the True, and he's done those kind of titles throughout his entire career.
Yes. And nowhere is it more on display than with John Astley's lyrics and titles and stuff. Mm-hmm. A very, very big comparison, a very apt comparison between him and Kevin Gilbert, and one that I never made until you brought it up. So good on you. Better Never Than Late is basically everything, every sound ever conceived in the 80s that an instrument could make, all recorded in one 3.5 minute song or 4.5 minute song, whatever it is. But no, I mean, it is really good lyric wise and clever, but it is very, it's got that bombastic keyboard sound that I really like from the 80s, and, you know, yeah, very keyboard heavy for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, it doesn't say in any of the sources that we're looking at if John himself plays any instruments or if he had studio musicians come in and do the drums and guitar and stuff like that. But
I don't know. What do you think based on
my experience? I would not be surprised if he's a keyboard player, just because it feels like that aspect is showcased so heavily in his stuff that, mm-hmm. That if he isn't, he works with a consistent keyboard player that knows his tricks.
Yeah.
Second song is Put This Love to the Test. It is the last song, I believe, on the Complete Angler album. I take that back. It's the second song. Just I guess it comes up the way this got imported into my library. But it's the lyrics basically say, I don't know if I like you or not, but let's go have sex and then we'll decide after that.
I've got something to say, I hope I never regret. Let's take off our clothes and put this love to the test.
And I don't know if you could get away with a song like that today.
not that blatantly. I think that there are lots of songs that are like that still.
Yeah.
But not one that is
probably more in hip hop than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just sung with such a deadpan. Let's take off our clothes and put this love to the test. Let's, you know, see.
another comparison would be Leonard Cohen.
Oh yeah, right. You know, and not just lyrically, but vocally as well. Mm-hmm. Not a voice that you'd say, oh man, that is an incredible singing voice. It's like, all right, he's got a deep, deep baritone, way easier to listen to later on in his career than at the beginning, I think. Mm-hmm. I think we both agreed on that.
Yeah.
But very, very similar thematically. Interesting. My last choice, another song from the Complete Angler album called The Menu.
I want to stop playing this game, but the devil's finding work for my hands to do. I've been watching your feet, giving me leg room. I can't stand the heat, I will stay out of the bedroom. I like to read the menu, but you know.
If Jane was getting serious, she must have been getting serious about the menu, because this feels like the sonic sequel to that song. There's a slight repeat of the dun 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 bass line that you have from Jane's Getting Serious, and I'd have to take a look at the lyrics specifically on this one to see, but I feel like this was an intended sequel.
Yeah, it could have been like a sweep.
Mm-hmm. Right. I like that. I do like when bands revisit songs and stories and characters that they've had before. David Bowie, great example of Major Tom coming back to that well a couple times. Duran Duran, we talked about when we did their show, that they came out this great song, The Chauffeur, in 1981, and then it took 16 years or something for them to do a sequel to it on that.
Called The Uber.
Yes, that's it right there, the Uber driver. Do I tip him? Da, 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 da. Should I sit in the front or the back? Anyway.
So
yes, let's get to yours.
I picked three as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I picked Been There, Done That.
Behind the cards held so close to my chest. Are you still unimpressed? Because I've been there, done that. What's next? Been there, I've done that, what's next?
And the reason I picked this was the first time listening, when I'm like, oh, this is Kevin Gilbert-y.
Yeah.
And that's the one that if I were going to point someone who's a Kevin Gilbert fan and say, hey, if you want to hear this guy and get a handhold on him, mm-hmm. this is the one that you start with.
This would be the gateway drug from Kevin Gilbert into John Astley.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the next one I picked was Welcome to the Circus.
Where all hopes are dashed with the greatest of ease, this daring young man is down on his knees. Welcome to the circus, a collection of mistakes.
I love the way the piano's played on this one. He's got amazing lyrics. My only drawback with it is that 80s sax.
Mm.
80s sax is a very specific type of sax.
Yeah.
And I wish this didn't have as much of it, but it's still a worthy song. A little bit too much Lost Boys sax in this. And the last one I picked was Suffering Fools. Mm. I think the lyrics, again, really, really stand out. But what makes it really interesting and meaningful is the fact that the instrumental breaks are not second thoughts. They carry on the emotion, they carry on the sentiment of the lyrics without any question that they were done the specific way on purpose. It's not just like, ooh, I'm going to play something pretty now. He's carrying on the lyrical content in the instrumental break.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. That's a good point. Wow. Cool. Yeah, as a producer, you probably don't just focus on the part of the music you control when you're a singer. you think about the whole, all the sides to it. And maybe that's a, that is a thing that, you know, when you've got a producer in the studio, like Mutt Lang or Hugh Padgham or who? Alan Parsons. Yeah. You probably say, great, you take care of all that stuff. I'll just focus on the singing. And with him, it's like, nope, you got to have all that. You got to be aware of all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that he's very much aware how the music plays against the lyric and then what the music does without the lyric and what the lyric does without the music. I think he's super aware of all of it. And he works really hard to make it all work and make it all convey a very congruous message.
Yeah. Oh, love it. Great, great choices. Very good, Hammond.
And that's coming in completely blind. So look at me.
Nicely done. Good. Well, I hope people, you know, like what they heard, the little snippets and things they heard from John Astley, and go and look for more of his music, because I do feel like it is, it's not a big investment of time. If you go to YouTube, you will find videos for songs like Put This Love to the Test, But Is It Commercial, Been There, Done That, Jane's Getting Serious, of course, Suffering Fools. Well, somebody just playing the album. And I do love it when you just see a video of somebody's record player, they're playing the song.
Yeah.
But there's some stuff out there that you can see to hear some more of them. And of course, you know, you can get John Astley's CDs probably for cheap. Looks like if you go to Amazon, get used copies. Yeah, you'll pay typical $16-$15 for his album.
The audio cassette was $4.41 for everyone.
Yeah, there you go.
Vinyl is $3.09.
Yeah, great. There you go. Get some used John Astley vinyl. The CD is a little bit more pricey, but well, $18. That's still not terribly pricey.
No.
But there you go.
He is intrinsically tied to the Who. Just so
he is. I know. Just doing a search for his music, it's like, oh yeah, you mean the Who? Because he did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's intrinsic.
Yeah. Forever linked. And you know what? Hey, if there is a thing that you will forever be connected to, I'd much rather be connected to the Who's Who Are You than Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up. Excellent. Well, that's a great place to leave things. Hey, you want to get in touch with us? Maybe there's some obscure 70s or 80s artist that you'd like us to take a look at, and you want to support us and help make that happen. You can always email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @TheSoundography. Visit our website, soundography.com. You can check out the playlist, which there won't be one today because there's no Rick Astley. Maybe we'll just link to Who Are You by The Who.
Or maybe you will go to one of those YouTube videos of watching the record player turn.
There you go. That's a really good idea. As a matter of fact, I think I might do that. So yeah, instead of a typical Spotify playlist, we'll just link to John Astley on YouTube. Great suggestion. And Amazon will probably point you to the one of the albums so mm-hmm. you can pick it up. Probably, I don't know. Even though Everyone Loves the Pilot has Jane's Getting Serious, I think I like
Dylan better.
Yeah, Complete Angler more. Yeah. So mm-hmm. we'll point you to that one for Amazon. Check out our website. You'll find links to all of our previous episodes, our show notes, our playlists, all that stuff, as well as a way to support us on Patreon. If there is an artist that you demand we do, you can make us do it. That is the way to do it. Go to patreon.com/soundography to find out more. And of course, yeah. Well,
before we do that, don't forget, we also have the level where if it's just an album you want us to demand us to listen to.
Oh, right. You got to listen to this album, this show series. Mm-hmm. Yes. So check that out as well. Right. And if it's at John Astley, then making us listen to one album is like listening to half their catalog.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Maybe somebody should do that for Bluey Sum. Anyway, and of course, leave us reviews anywhere that you get your podcasts. Tell us about what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback. And if you like the short shows as much as the long shows, I know I do. That is going to do it. Next week on Soundography, this is going to be an exciting one. Foo Fighters. I'm excited to talk about Foo Fighters and the fact that they're yet another band that does not have a "the" in front of their name. Never call them the Foo Fighters because they aren't.
Are they Foo Fighters?
They are some Foo Fighters.
Okay.
But not like some 41. Some 41 Foo Fighters. That is going to do it. On behalf of
that's a sponsored show too.
Oh, it is. Yes, right. So, Joe, if you're listening, that's going to be your show. We're looking forward to talking about it and listening to all that music. Cool. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Nibbett saying we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.